are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, welcome back to Locked On Brewers, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network, where we talk about your favorite teams every day. I am your host, Jake Mastriani. You can follow me on Twitter at shortstopball. Check out all of the areas there where I am covering the sport of baseball. Also joining me is Vinny Rotino, part of the pre and post game show on Bally Sports Wisconsin. And you can follow him on Twitter at Vinny Rotino. Also, make sure you follow the podcast on Twitter at Lockdown Brewers and subscribe to the Lockdown Brewers podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, you make sure that you get notified whenever we post a new episode, which we do 5 days a week. So plenty of opportunities here for you to listen about your favorite team, the Milwaukee Brewers. On today's episode, going to give you a couple of news items. We got some signings from the draft that I wanted to talk about, as well as some injury updates. And then we'll get into the recap for Tuesday's game against the Royals and preview what's coming up next. Before we do that, I'll remind you this episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the Spotify Green Room app now and join me at Shortstop Ball in the app the next time I go live to get in on the action. But I want to start with some news, since Tuesday's game was a kind of a stinker and not really what most Milwaukee fans are focused on Tuesday. Everybody pumped up for game six. But getting to some of the news, some exciting news, the Brewers signed three of their first four picks. They signed outfielder Sal Frelick out of Boston College for $4 million, which was a little over the slot value for that pick, which was $3,885,800. So again, just a little over slot there, not much. He'll head to Arizona, get back in baseball shape. It's been a while since he played in his college season. And they'll probably assign him to, I would think, low A Carolina, if I had to guess, now that you don't really have that rookie ball league in between there, unless they just keep him out in Arizona to play there. But since he is kind of a, you know, advanced hitter college guy, I wouldn't be surprised if they send him out to the Mudcats. They also signed Tyler Black for $2.2 million, which was the full price value for that pick in the second round there, or no, it was a comp round. And then they signed their third round pick, Alex Benales, for $700,000, which was literally $200 above slot value for that pick. So again, a slight over slot sign there, but nothing major. Should still have plenty of money left to try to sign some of these other high school picks that they made later on in the draft. So yeah, it's big to get those guys signed. I love that this stuff happens kind of quickly with the draft being later now. I think that's, you know, part of it. But yeah, get your top guys signed, get them in the system, hopefully get some at bats out of them, especially with being bats with some of the pitchers, you know, who pitched a full season in college or high school. They may not go straight to the minors and get more reps in this year, just depending on what their workload was. But with the bats, there's really not a ton of risk there, just letting them continue to get at bats and get more work in. So could see those guys again in Carolina here pretty soon, which would be really exciting. But Vinny, any thoughts on getting those three signed?
Yeah, I saw Frelick at the ballpark when I was doing the pre and post game show. He showed up obviously to sign, and then he was available for questions and answers with the media. So, yeah, I mean, looks exactly what the scouting report kind of talked about what he is. He's a ball, looks like a ball player, looks like, you know, look, I just saw him in a suit coat and, you know, so I'm just saying, like, in terms of his physical presence, you know, what I've heard him being comped to is Andrew Benintendi. Turns out to be Andrew Benintendi. That's a heck of a pick. In my opinion, because I really am high on Andrew Benintendi. But anyway, so if that's what he turns out to be, he kind of looks like him, physical size and everything, and height and weight type measurements. Not a huge imposing physical specimen by any stretch of the imagination, but that's not what the scouting report said on the kid. So looking forward to seeing him get out there and play. And then the other one that I wanted to mention was Alex Benelis. I just wanted to mention that this kid was a top 10 preseason pick on all the draft boards. I mean, he really was a guy that freshman year at Louisville really just dominated. And, you know, obviously he's put up numbers in college, and that's why he was so high on the boards. I mean, I think the MO is that you just don't know where he's going to play. But he's the point I'm making is that the Brewers got him for $700,000 when this kid was probably slotted a less than a year ago, probably 6 months ago, to be a $4 million player, right, out of the draft. So, you know, I like that pick. I thought that was, and I think the kid can hit, and try and find a place for him as long as he can hit. So anyway, I thought that those were the two things of significance for me. And then I am high on that Wright State kid.
Tyler Black.
Yeah, Tyler Black. So yeah, I like all three of these picks.
Yeah, and I like Benayas as well. I was really big on him. He had a just dreadful start to his college season this year, which really, you know, hurt his draft stock. But I mean, you look at what he did the last couple of months there, and that's mostly against ACC competition, which is really good baseball. And he was like he was his first couple of years at Louisville. And I know Louisville tried him at both corners. I don't expect him to ever be a great defender at either spot, but I mean, look at what the Brewers have at first base right now. Obviously that's not a top priority if they can hit. And I believe Benayas will hit. Very mature approach at the plate. So I do love that pick for $700,000. Like you said, most people coming in the year thought he was going to be a $3, possibly $4 million sign. So that's very, very good value for the Brewers there. Moving on to some injury news, Justin Topa was sent to AA Biloxi, continuing his rehab assignment. So he gets closer to joining the Brewers bullpen, which would be much needed help there if he can come back and be, you know, the Topa that we know he can be. Also in the bullpen, Brad Boxberger and Devin Williams threw on Tuesday. Boxberger believes he'll avoid the IL, but still obviously is day-to-day. And Williams believes he'll be back after the minimum 10 days. So could have both of them back pretty soon, perhaps by the weekend. So that'd be much added benefit. With these two off days this week are huge for those two, obviously, getting them back to full strength. But we saw on Tuesday what not having those two kind of does to this bullpen. So really need them back and healthy and effective. And then Lorenzo Cain, he was back in Nashville's lineup on Tuesday. I think he'll continue to play there until he feels ready to come back. That's just kind of the vibe I'm getting out of that situation. It's, you know, I think he's healthy. Obviously he's able to play. He was able to play a full game. You know, he's not exactly hitting at Nashville, but like I talked about before, when, you know, a veteran like Cain, I don't think you particularly worry about that, but the Brewers have given themselves a little bit of a cushion in the division. So I think they've allowed for this to give Cain the opportunity to not only just get back to full strength, but get back to where he feels good and where he can be a constant contributor in the lineup. Vinny, is that kind of how you see this situation playing out?
That's a good take on the situation. I don't really know the situation, but that's a good take. I haven't really thought about it much, but likely what's happening here is that the Brewers, like you said, have a little bit of a cushion, don't need him to be slotted. Look, they're probably going to have to ease him back into it. They don't want him to get injured again. So you can ease him back in AAA, you know, give him a couple, three at-bats a night, whatever, off day every 2-3 days. That kind of jams up your roster if you're doing that at the major league level, right? So it's probably the approach that they're taking with Locaine, just to kind of ease him back in. They have that luxury because, like you said, about the nice lead that they've built up. So that's a solid take. A full strength Lorenzo Cain. I mean, we see what he can do when he's fully rested, fully healthy. He played really well earlier in the year, popped a couple homers. I mean, it was a short sample, small sample. So that really would put a little boost into this team.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely want him back, but you know, with the cushion they've given themselves, it kind of affords them that opportunity to kind of wait, play things out. You want him as crisp as he can be for the stretch run and going into the postseason, hopefully, if the Brewers get there. So definitely, you know, don't want to rush him back, but sounds like he'll just continue to work in Nashville again until he feels like he's ready. And then I wanted to mention this because I don't even know they did this, but apparently Luis Urias won MLB Play of the Week again. Apparently it was his second time to do that. I don't even know MLB had a Play of the Week. But as for his double play in the ninth inning last Saturday against the Reds, which was a really nicely turned double play. It's just crazy how Urias can make some amazing plays at times, but then just struggles to throw the ball to first every now and then on easy routine throws. But he has had some highlight reels this year for sure. So wanted to mention that because we often talk about how bad his throwing is at times, but he's also made some really good plays with the glove. We'll come back and we'll recap Tuesday's game. Before we do that, let me tell you about our friends at Wild Alaskan. Do you love to order fish when you go out to eat, but never make it for yourself at home? Cooking restaurant quality dishes at home starts with high quality seafood and simple techniques from Wild Alaskan Seafood. Wild Alaskan Company delivers high quality, sustainably sourced, wild caught seafood right to your door. Choose from salmon, whitefish, or a combination. And every month there are different specials to explore. Each shipment contains premium wild cod, individually wrapped portions of delicious seafood that's ready to prepare and easy to cook. You can adjust, pause, or cancel your membership anytime, and they offer 100% satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. And right now, you can get $15 off your first box of premium seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/MLB. That's wildalaskancompany.com/MLB for $15 off your first box. So, Vinny, getting into Tuesday's game, and I know you did the pre- and post-game show on this one, which will be great to get your insight because I was working, so I didn't get to watch all of the game. But I thought Brett Anderson was solid. You know, I'll take five innings and two earned out of him every time out. He only threw 72 pitches, but Council seemed pretty eager to get him out of there. Had the bullpen going even in the fifth inning before, you know, anything really happened. But with his spot going up in the order in the sixth, I understand taking him out there. But Vinny, what were your thoughts on Brett Anderson in this game?
Brett Anderson was solid. What I liked about what Brett Anderson was able to do tonight was the fact that he didn't actually have real good command of that sinker. So he kind of pivoted and went more towards landing the curveball and the slider for strikes. So, and then the other thing that he was able to do was, obviously, he's been throwing the changeup a ton lately, and he continued to do that. So he makes his pitches well, kept him off balance, got 9 ground ball outs, which is a ton, 5 innings of work. So, I agree. I mean, he's not going to punch anybody out. He's not going to overpower anybody. But, you know, he's one of those guys where, you know, you face him 3 times, you look up, you didn't have an uncomfortable at bat at all, and you're 0-3 with 3 ground outs. So he's one of those guys for the opposing hitters. You take that every time.
Yeah, for sure. And moving on to the bullpen, Hunter Strickland's been great with Milwaukee. I think those numbers are a bit deceiving. I think his results have probably been better than the metrics would tell you. But still, he's pitched 11 2/3 scoreless innings with Milwaukee coming into Tuesday's game. And he's actually stretched that to 12.2 scoreless innings with a clean sixth inning. And in hindsight, Council probably got a little greedy trying to push him back out there for another inning. I know Strickland's done that at times this year, done it a couple times this year, but still, if you had a full complement of bullpen arms, Council probably goes with somebody else there in the seventh. You know, say if they had Boxberger and Williams healthy, you probably go Boxberger in the seventh, Williams in the eighth, and Hader in the ninth in a tie game there. But he doesn't. So he sent Strickland back out there and he gave up that game deciding 2-run homer to Ryan O'Hearn, which again, essentially just decided the game. What's interesting is Cousins would have come in for the eighth, which tells you that Cousins is pretty much the setup guy now with Boxberger and Devin Williams out, which again, that's just crazy to think about right now with where this bullpen is at. But it looked like Cousins was going to come in the eighth if the game was tied or if he needed somebody to get him out of that seventh inning. Instead, we got Miguel Sanchez, who allowed a tack-on run in the eighth. And then Perdomo was really sharp in the ninth, which is great to see. I mentioned, you know, he was dominating down there in Nashville during his rehab assignment. I mean, just absolutely blowing hitters away. Hopefully he's figured something out there with his control. He has the stuff. We've talked about it a lot. And hopefully he can, you know, continue to dominate moving up into the Milwaukee bullpen. Now they certainly could use another arm like that. But Vinny, your thoughts overall on the bullpen usage in this one?
Yeah, I'll touch on that bright spot first as well. Perdomo is 11 out of 13 strikes, which is like, I don't think he's ever been that in his entire life, even in Little League probably. I mean, the guy just has a great arm. He just has to be able to corral it. And he showed the ability to do it. Looks synced up. You know, I don't know if there is something that it was a physical adjustment that he made down in Nashville, but that is a encouraging sign if that can continue and he can show some consistency with doing that. So, yeah, I mean, Miguel Sanchez actually really struggled with his command. I think he was being a little bit too careful and throwing too many off-speed pitches when he could have attacked hitters. He needed a ground ball out. And, he kept throwing his slider, which is his third best pitch, out of the zone, kept getting behind hitters. So that was a little bit discouraging. I'm sure he'll bounce back. This kid's been pitching in high leverage situations basically his entire career by playing in winter ball every year, which it doesn't get much more high leverage than that. Well, I mean, it really doesn't. I mean, yeah. if you don't perform in the Dominican Winter League, right, you will not pitch. So, he'll bounce back from this outing for sure. I really like what Miggy Sanchez has been able to do. Hunter Strickland wasn't a great matchup. He got behind O'Hearn, who can hurt you if you get behind him, and then he just kind of grew the heater. So the discouraging part about the bullpen in general, though, is just the couple of injuries, the Boxberger injury, and then I know that they're not kind of downplaying him. You just hate to hear two of your main pieces out of the bullpen mm-hmm. being dinged even a little bit. So I mean, it just kind of points to the idea of maybe acquiring a couple of relievers at the trade deadline.
For sure. Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. I think that's definitely on the shopping list right now. It's just nobody's really going to in any hurry to move those until it gets closer to the deadline. But I definitely think they get at least an arm or two. And there will be a lot available. There'll be a lot of bullpen arm moved, and Brewers will be in the mix on those. Moving to the offensive side of things, the Brewers actually out hit the Royals in this one 9-6, but they had just one extra base hit, which was a double by Evesel Garcia. Meanwhile, the Royals had two home runs in this one, or may have had three. That was their scoring. They got the home runs. The Brewers didn't. Yeah, they had two home runs, the Soler and the O'Hearn home run. But, I mean, it's good. Obviously, the Brewers getting those hits, but 2-for-11 with runners in scoring position. And maybe the biggest play of the game came in the bottom of the seventh, and the Brewers had the bases loaded with one out. They had three hits that had an average exit velocity of 73.2 miles per hour. So it looked like maybe luck was on their side and a comeback was near. But then Adames grounded into a double play on a ball that was hit 94.9 miles an hour. So that's just kind of baseball sometimes. But Vinny, I thought that was the biggest play in the game offensively. I thought they had a shot to get back in it there, put a couple of runs on the board and give themselves a chance.
Yeah, I agree something big's gonna happen here with a couple of three blue pits that kind of were the carbon copies of each other, and then had the right guy up at the time. Kyle Zimmer grooved a fastball right down the middle, 94, right at the thigh high, just where Willie Adames likes it. He got a little jumpy, I think, and just was a hair early on it. Still barreled it up. I mean, if that finds the hole or goes up the middle, it's two runs and it's a big inning. Obviously, it went right to shortstop. Nicky Lopez turn a double play. So a little discouraging there, but that was their one shot to break it open or to score some runs there.
Yeah, unfortunately, just Adamas wasn't able to come through. He's been so big. Again, this is, we talk about it every night on the podcast how big Adamas has been. But coming up in that spot after things started going their way, you knew Adamas was about to hit a grand slam or just do something amazing. Unfortunately, like you said, the ball hit hard but went right to the shortstop for the double play. I should mention Avisail Garcia as well. I mentioned the double he had three hits in this one. His average is up to 260 on the season. He was my first half MVP. I think he's been huge for this Brewers offense. He had a stolen base in this one, but his foot popped off the bag for a millisecond. And Whit Merrifield, to his credit, held the tag on and replay overturned it. Not exactly a huge spot in that game because there was two outs after Urias struck out. But I don't know. I kind of hate that out of replay when you get those reviews like that where the foot pops off the bag for just a second.
Needs to be eliminated from the game. I'm sorry. I'm just going to interrupt you right now and say it's like the defeat completely defeats the purpose of why replay is there. I mean, it should not be reviewable. If he beats the play, he's safe, and then there's a minor pop off. It just cheapens the game. I hate it. That's the worst rule. That I get it. It's actually, you know, the letter of the law or the letter of the rule book that they're following there, but I don't know.
Yeah,
don't get me started, Jake.
Yeah, no, that wasn't replay's intention to catch people who pop off the bag for half a second because their momentum, you know, takes them that way. That's not what replay is intended for. You know, yes, by the letter of the rule, like you said, you know, he's out, but it puts a bad taste in my mouth as well. I can't stand it. Obviously, can't stand it because it went against the Brewers. This, but anytime that happens, I just think that's not what replay is for, and I agree. I think it should be taken out, but I don't think
to be ever... clear. To be clear, even if the Brewers benefit from that, I hate it. Just to let you know.
Right. Nope. your feelings are clear on that one, and I appreciate you interrupting to make it so. I feel the same way. I wish they could eliminate that somehow. All right, we'll take another break, and we'll come back and put a bow on this episode. Before we do that, I'll remind you, this show is also brought to you by our friends at Built Bar. If you're looking for a fantastic tasting protein bar, then look no further. I tell you about them all the time. Built Bar has a wide variety of flavors. It's not just your regular chocolate chip, chocolate, fudge. They have a bunch of different flavors from almond toffee to mint, coconut flavored, peanut butter fudge, dark chocolate raspberry, something that's going to give you a very unique taste, something that tastes good as well. They're not hard as a rock like a lot of the other protein bars out there. You know which ones I'm talking about. Has a very soft middle, so it's easy to chew, easy to get down. They're very good, they're very tasty, and they're great for you as well. Most of them only have about 5 net carbs. So whether you like to take them before a workout, after workout, as a meal replacement in the morning, or whether they're just a snack for you like they are for me, you can eat them anytime. I can't tell you enough how good they are, especially for a protein bar. Go to BuiltBar.com today and try a bunch of different flavors to figure out which ones are your favorites. Go to BuiltBar.com and use our promo code LOCKEDON15 for 15% off your next order. Again, just go to BuiltBar.com today and use the promo code LOCKEDON15.
Today's episode is brought to you in part by Fully Loaded Chew. Fully Loaded Chew is tobacco-free, long cut, and pouches that give you the same pack, dip, spit, and buzz you're used to without tobacco. Available in 9 flavors, Fully Loaded Chew is made with all food-grade ingredients and tobacco-free nicotine, the purest form of nicotine available. Maybe you or a friend or a family member uses Chew right now. Guess what? Transitioning to Fully Loaded Chew is easy. It tastes and feels just like traditional smokeless products, which makes an easy transition away from traditional tobacco smokeless products. Fully Loaded Chew is offering Locked On Brewers listeners a special offer right now. You could try a can for just $1. $1! That's incredible. Go to FullyLoadedChew.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, all one word. Just $1 and free shipping if you use the code LOCKEDON on at checkout. The next time you go for a dip, make it Fully Loaded Chew at FullyLoadedChew.com.
So Vinny, I'm not a betting man at all. Not a real big proponent of it, although I know we do have our sponsor on here, betonline.ag. But if I were a betting man, I would be putting a lot of money on the Brewers winning on Wednesday. There's just no way they lose all 4 games to the Royals this season, is there?
I mean, I mean, yes, there is. I mean, they play like they just played. I mean, look, Brad Keller's been good in the past. Rule 5 pick a couple of years ago. So, I mean, they got to score some runs. Obviously, Eric Bauer's pitched really well. This game is not a gimme. Royals team is, I got to be honest, this Royals club does not look that good. They're very beatable just in general. But, yeah, they could certainly lose all four games to the Kansas City Royals this year, and it could happen tomorrow. So, certainly not a lock. Should beat this club. They gotta hit. They gotta get some runners on base, and obviously they gotta execute. So, I mean, I hope you just didn't jinx them, Jake.
I was working on the reverse jinx there, I think, or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's my take. I mean, they're beatable for sure. They gotta get it done though.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully they will. I mean, it's a weird week. Again, you're coming out of the All-Star break. You got a Monday off, two games against the Royals, another off day. So, I mean, you really got to win this one or it's going to be a long time between wins for you. But I do think they have a good chance of doing that. Yeah, even though the pitching matchup, I guess you could probably consider it a toss-up. Like you said, Keller's been good at times. Overall, his numbers aren't great. But you could really say the same about Eric Lauer. So it's really going to be up to that offense. Can they break through, put a big number up on the board? I think they will. I think they get the win and finally beat the Kansas City Royals this year. That will do it for this episode of Locked On Brewers. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Brewers. You can follow me at Shortstop Ball and Benny at Benny Rutino. Also, make sure you subscribe to the Locked On Brewers podcast wherever you get your podcast, and we'll talk to you next time.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.